Today I'd like to talk about domestication and breeding of Panaid shrimp and how it intersects with biosecurity. I'll be talking sort of in a global context, although a lot of my experiences are more local. I'm a researcher in applied breeding. I'm not a policy expert, nor a health expert, nor a biosecurity expert. So I'll be giving a perspective largely from an industry point of view or an industry researcher point of view, and certainly from my own point of view. So I really should start just talking about domestication. I think most people know what domestication is. It's largely breeding animals for a captive environment, typically a human-controlled environment in which the animals can survive and reproduce. Again, I think most people know why we'd like to domesticate animals. It's really to have, in the farming context, to control the farming system. In the shrimp context, to get away from reliance on wild stocks, which bring risk in terms of performance and also health, and also so you have complete control over the production system. Probably even more importantly, it enables genetic improvement, and this is through selective breeding programs. I'd probably like to make a little to distinguish initially between two forms of selection. One is domestication selection, which you can think of sort of natural selection within an artificial environment where a whole host of traits are being selected for to effectively enable an animal to survive and reproduce in a captive environment. The other form is artificial selection, which is more about commercially traits which have been identified for commercial selection and are being targeted in a selective breeding process. So I'll just make that distinguish at the start, although the two forms do overlap. Just in terms of shrimp breeding programs, things kicked off in the 1990s. The initial focus was really about domestication and trying to get around some of the biosecurity issues of health and develop specific pathogen-free stocks. And then following on from that, there was a focus on more formal selective breeding for traits such as growth, survival and disease resistance. Certainly, as you'd all be aware, some species achieved massive commercial success, particularly Vannamei, and a major component of that was to do with the ease of domestication, although there were many other aspects that contributed to the success of that species. The industry now consists of a range of different levels of operation, breeding companies, seed stock suppliers, grow-out farmers, and the whole integrated businesses. One point I want to make is in terms of domestication progressing to selective breeding, it does differ between species how easy it is. Some species, for example, in our experience in Australia with Panaeus japonicus, the two processes happened in unison pretty much. The species was very easy to domesticate, whereas others like Monodon are more difficult. And often you can almost think of the processes in two stages. So the pace of transition varies among the species, and the approaches and outcomes of domestication influence the future trajectory into selective breeding. So what are the outcomes of domestication? Well, effectively, you're changing the animal. Genetically, there is a narrowing of diversity. That is the intent of selective breeding. That is the inevitable outcome of domestication. So these changes flow on to physiological, behavioural changes and changes in the health status of the animal. For example, with prawns, I know a good example in the banana prawns was the animals seem to become tamer, more calm. That's an easy outcome to imagine. I think, as Peter Walker was mentioning, I think also it's common you get changes in the pathogens, particularly as the artificial environment might put different pressures onto the stocks. So, for example, if you're very liberal with your use of antibiotics in the process, you might induce changes in the pathogens in the environment. So some key considerations in the domestication phase of this process is really how you go about health management, risks of genetic bottlenecks, particularly if a species is hard to breed, you can quickly result in very narrowing genetic diversity early on. And there is another issue of really how you balance domestication selection and artificial selection for different species, which probably won't go into here. But effectively, domestication determines, you know, the future health management, founder diversity for your breeding program, and really, that influences the scope of your selective breeding program. So certainly, in our experiences with Monodon Australia, we've seen with selected stocks big changes in growth as you'd expect, but also in a lot of other physiological related traits, food intake, higher feed efficiency, lower demand for energy. So we've quantified a lot of these things in controlled trials. What we've also seen, and we haven't established a formal disease resistance selective breeding program, but just over the course of time, we've certainly noticed changes in viral tolerance, I'll call it, in the species. These two graphs from a range of trials, but effectively the green line shows the survivorship of the selected lines, and it's much higher than wild lines when they're subject to various dilutions of gill-associated virus inoculum in our instance. So just to summarise, domestication, you do see changes in the animal, that's the intention. You see changes in the pathogen, potentially, depending on the way you go about it. And this all sets the path for where you go to next in terms of selective breeding. So now I'll come to the second part, biosecurity. This is a definition of biosecurity I will use. I'm sure there's many others. It's really about the procedures or measures to protect against harmful biological or biochemical substances. Like I said, there may be other definitions. I also always think of risk management when it comes to biosecurity. But typically there's, you know, the thoughts of biosecurity is the biofouling organisms moving in. But there's also the considerations that have at the enterprise scale on how you manage the waters coming in and the waters and products that are leaving an actual aquaculture operation. So the question here is how these intersect. So I presume most people in this room would realise that biosecurity has been and still is a major issue in shrimp aquaculture. So the first thing is, I guess we have to identify whose biosecurity we're talking about. There's the breeding programs themselves, people buying stocks, the wider industry and related industries, the consumers and the environment. So all these levels and all these this range of people and concerns have to be considered. So this is my simplistic way to think about it. There's the inward. If you're looking at it from an industry operator's perspective, there's the inward levels of biosecurity, things coming into your farm you want to keep out, and then there's what goes out. In terms of the nature of these concerns, there's invasive, what I call invasive or invasive species considerations, genetic pollution or genetic dilution that will come from moving one genetic pool into another genetic pool of animals. And there's the obvious health concerns, which I would say typically seem to be the main focus when biosecurity is mentioned, certainly in the case of shrimp. In Australia, I think there's also a fair emphasis on the genetic aspects of biosecurity as well. But also, there are concerns about the invasive species concerns. I'll say this invasion of the giant cannibal shrimp in Florida. Its monodon was introduced over there, and there is certainly a lot of concerns about the nature of that introduction. And I'm not exactly sure of how large this sort of concern is in many parts of Asia, to be honest, and whether it's really being recognised as a major issue. So in terms of the links between domestication and biosecurity, as I said before, the intention of domestication selective breeding is to change the genetic architecture and health status of the stocks. In a way, this change does pose biosecurity risk by nature of these stock changes themselves, but also by pressures to switch from farming one species to another. So the real questions are, how significant are the biosecurity risks from all these different dimensions, and what are the approaches to mitigate these risks? So again, I presume most people in this room would be very aware that the farming of exotic shrimp has significantly increased global shrimp production, particularly the introduction of Vanamai to Asia. And though there is massive success, there's also been major issues, particularly associated with viral and now EMS, biosecurity issues around Asia particularly. So this has often raised this idea or the question about whether there should be a switch to the farming of native versus exotic species. So should they switch back to or go back to farming or, in the case if they haven't already done so, use native species. But I guess you first have to look at why people farmed exotics in the first place, and it's obviously because of their high genetic performance, established production systems, and their commercially proven animals. But the question is the biosecurity risk from those exotics, and also whether this risk does justify a switch to farming native species. But of course, switching to natives doesn't relinquish all biosecurity concerns. There are still risks at both the genetic and health dimensions of using native species. So approaches are still needed to manage biosecurity. I think an important thing is we need information, good information, about the commercial potential of natives versus exotics in the production, in terms of using them in the production system. But we also need to consider the relative biosecurity risk of natives versus exotic at these different dimensions. The other thing I think is important, we need to identify what natives are. I mean, are they endemic locally or nationally, or are they just the same species when we're talking about using native species? So I think you need to really know something about the geographic scale of natives, which requires you to understand the population structures and population genetics of the species. And often, if we have that information at all, it's only at a very, very broad level. Also, it's important to know what the genetic quality is of those different native populations. To assess genetic quality of different animals from different areas, you usually need to do formal strain evaluations, which will tell you whether one stock is going to be of higher quality than another. And in terms of the health, you need to do fairly extensive health screening. Retaining samples for screening of new or different viruses that you're not initially aware of. So I guess the big question is, what is the genetic and health biosecurity risks of farming of natives? In the Australian situation, I'll use Monodon as an example. There are significant interstate constraints on moving animals around, and we do have some knowledge of the broad population structure, but we have limited understanding of the finer scale population structures. And I would say health knowledge exists, but it's still limited in terms of prevalence, viral strain variation, although we've got some projects at the moment trying to improve our understanding of that. And certainly I don't think our understanding of the pathogenicity of different viruses from different areas is really well understood. So there's probably a big question over what are the risks and how significant they are in terms of translocations, certainly within Australia, but this probably applies in other jurisdictions as well. So I guess my main points, you still need to consider biosecurity if you're farming natives, and you probably have to think seriously about the significance of translocations of even native species. Importantly, quality information is really needed to assess the risk. And the third point is there are some possibly unpredictable outcomes. I think, again, Peter was talking about, new viruses coming on or changes in viruses due to pressures that happen in the artificial environment. So there probably are ways you can manage that to a degree, but I guess the overall approach to biosecurity has to think about that as well. So natives as alternatives, I think quality information is critical, the commercial potential, although it can be very difficult to assess the commercial potential of a unselected native species compared to a highly selected species for which a production system has already been established. You're not comparing apples with apples. So there are ways you can do it, but it's not straightforward. I think you do need to really evaluate the biosecurity risks from using exotics, but also from using natives. And if it is the health dimension that's viewed as the largest risk to biosecurity, I think the information on the pathogenicity of viruses is really, from the different native populations, is important, and the susceptibility of the receiving host populations. Maybe some of this seems a bit redundant when you're talking about white spot and EMS, which we pretty much know are highly pathogenic, but I think there are always different situations for different areas. What I would say is there are a range of evolving new tools and techniques which really can assist biosecurity, both at the enterprise level but also for the policy makers, wider industry, environmental regulators. There's some genetics and genomics tools which really can help manage your programs better, that can allow you to assess the current status of the genetic architecture of stocks without having deep pedigrees. So that could be useful for a range of applications. I think the critical, most important thing is viral control within the programs, interventionist approaches, antivirals, which will have I can see is really having the benefit of being able to develop SPF and SPR and SPF and SPR lines into the future, which will have a great control, at least in terms of managing viruses within breeding programs. And the last thing is rapid and accurate viral diagnostics, able to cope with the range of strains that show up, particularly coupled with challenge trials. I think this will be really important for providing quality information. So in terms of achieving biosecurity, there's policy and regulations are obviously important, but the information, the quality of information that is there to provide, to be able to make those policies is going to be very important. As mentioned, the operational procedures used by industry are evolving, improving, and are critical into the future. But I think a major part of it is having well-managed breeding programs, effectively. If you can control and improve the pathogen status of your farm stocks, this is going to go a long way to improving the whole situation in terms of biosecurity. You know, healthy shrimp adapted to the culture environment won't turn up dead on the side of the pond. You won't have major mortality episodes and birds transferring dead prawns around the environment, and you'll have just generally less pathogen loading in your farming system. And again, amenable farming systems. I've heard people talk about EMS, even at this conference, that BioFlock systems may provide, if not a complete remedy, certainly go a long way to improving management of that bacterial pathogen. Nursery systems. There's a few other things mentioned just before I can't quite remember that can be really important. So these things can really contribute. And of course, having a great breeding program also means the farmers are making money and they can invest in improved biosecurity into the future. So quite simply, I think well-managed breeding programs will play a large part in biosecurity, quality genetic management, quality health management, and it should be that these programs are seen not just like a biosecurity risk in a way, but as a real important part of the solution. So just to summarise, biosecurity at all those dimensions I've talked about is, I think, is very important whether you're farming exotic or you want to go back to native species. We need some quality information to objectively assess the level of biosecurity risk and to use that in when policies are being made. And I think well-managed breeding programs and farming operations are going to play a key role in mitigating biosecurity risk throughout the industries. Thanks very much.